Hello and welcome to another edition of Visions with me, Yudalee Wickham Ashby. And as usual, I'm really happy to have you sharing my company and me sharing your company. Today, we're going to discuss with a beautiful young lady the whole topic of Turner's syndrome and how it has impacted her life. I'm really honored to introduce Luciana Alves. Welcome to the program, Luciana.
Thank you, Yudalee. Thank you for having me. Hi, you all. How are you doing?
Well, I would say on behalf of my people in Barbados, we are relatively well. We are very thankful because we've had quite a few experiences in the past 2 weeks. We've had a spike in our COVID cases. We've also had some damage at the passage of Hurricane Elsa. So we are thankful.
Sorry about the spike on the COVID cases and on the little damages. And I am glad that you guys are coping very well despite of these challenges, right?
Thank you. Yes, we're trying very hard to cope. So, Luciana, tell me a little about yourself. Introduce yourself and tell us what is Turner's syndrome.
So I'm Luciana. I was born in Brazil. I'm now currently living here in Montreal, Canada. I am doing a doctorate here. Basically, that's me in a nutshell. So what is Turner's syndrome, right? So Turner's syndrome is a genetic dysfunction or abnormality, right? Where there is a partial or total loss of the chromosome number 23 that is responsible for assigning genetically, biologically, a person's sex, meaning that instead of being born XX as a normal woman or XY as a normal man, a person with Turner syndrome is born with XO. Also, this genetic dysfunction abnormality only affects fetuses that were genetically, biologically assigned as female.
So, Luciana, now you have discovered you have Turner syndrome. How did you feel about your diagnosis?
So, I was diagnosed at birth, right? So, meaning I lived with Turner syndrome my whole life. So, it is part of who I am, right? And I love who I am. So I can only feel comfortable with the Turner syndrome diagnosis, right? I cannot change who I am. I cannot change my diagnosis. Therefore, I better be in peace with the diagnosis that was given to me, or else I will live a bitter, unhappy, incoherent life, right? Trying to be a person that I'm not. This is who I am.
Okay. So you have accepted your diagnosis. How did your family, how did your parents feel about you as a young woman with Turner syndrome?
My family always provided me with medical and psychological support, right? Even though they had their own coping to do, right? I'm not a mother, I'm not a father, I'm not a grandmother, I'm not a grandfather, but I assume that it must be very hard for a mother, a father, a grandmother, a grandfather to learn that their firstborn child, their first granddaughter, was born with a disability.
Tell us about what type of treatment you have received to help you adjust to living with Turner syndrome.
My treatment, since I was 4 years old until I was 15 years old, consisted of bricking, injecting growth hormones in my body, right? And from 13 years old until now, meaning 37 years old, it consists of taking progesterone and estrogen hormones through birth control pills, right? So when I had to brick, inject growth hormones, it was quite uncomfortable, right? Because I would always have little bruises where I bricked and injected it. If I had to sleep over at a friend's house, I would have to take the whole pack, which means syringes, hormones, alcohol wipes to disinfect the area that was to be bricked or injected. And a part of that back in the day, I'm speaking of late 80s, early 90s, right? There were no pens, right? It was just those big syringes, those big ampoules, more precisely two of them, right? One ampoule had liquid content and the other one had powder content, and you had to mix it, adjust the dosage with a syringe and then brick it, right? But then when I turned 12 or 13 years old, I cannot remember precisely, but then the pen got into the market. So it went quite easy. So what we had to do, it was just one ampoule that you had to insert in the pen and then set the amount of doses that you wanted. And with the progesterone and estrogen, it is very easy because it's very discreet, right? I just have to swallow a little pill and that's that.
Okay. So tell us then what your school experience was like going to primary and secondary school.
Oh, it was very hard. It was a lot of bullying, a lot of adjusting because, as I said, I'm Brazilian, but when I was 4 years old, my dad decided to do his PhD in the United States because of him, but because of myself as well, because he knew that I needed to start my hormone treatments, right? So we had to go there. So I've already started learning to read and write in Portuguese. And then I had to learn how to read and write in English. And then when I turned 8 years old, the PhD of my dad finished. So we had to go back to Brazil. So it then went back from English to Portuguese again. It was very confusing times for me at school. So a lot of adjustments, a lot of challenges, a lot of struggles, and a lot of bullying.
So how did you cope with the bullying and the various challenges that you experienced during this period?
I didn't. It was very hard. A lot of crying, a lot of insatisfaction, a lot of speaking to mom and dad about the situation, and etc.
Okay. So then you would have left secondary school and considered going to university.
Yes.
Right. So again, share with us what the university experience has been like, because you're still at university.
Yes, I'm still at university. It's the best days of my life. I didn't have to cope with anything at university. University was wonderful. I didn't know at the beginning when I was in my undergrad studies that I would like education, because I didn't choose education. Education was chosen for me by my mother. Okay. But I ended up loving what I do, and I still do until now. I love university. It is a complete, absolute different universe than primary and secondary school.
So did you start university in Brazil?
Yes. So I did my undergrad studies in Brazil. I did my master's in Spain. And now I'm doing my doctorate here in Canada.
Okay. So you would have done some studying in three different countries. Yes. Tell us about the comparison. What was it like doing your undergrad in Brazil, your master's in Spain, and now your PhD in Canada?
My undergrad studies was very smooth. It was in my country. It was in my language, right? So everything went nice and smooth. I took the decision to do a master's in Spain because when I was in my undergrad studies, I decided to do an exchange international program between my university in Brazil and a university back in Portugal, more specifically, the University of Coimbra. And I enjoyed very much the European experience. So I decided that I wanted to go back to Europe once I finished my undergrad studies. I knew that I wanted to learn a different language because I already had the Portuguese, I already had the English. So it was an easy decision to choose the university back in Spain, right? And I came back to Canada because, once again, because of my dad and my family, right? When I was in Spain, my dad was, well, he already was transferred for a couple of years to work for a Canadian company. And when he was there, he decided that he wanted to start our immigration process here in Canada. And he asked me if I wanted to do that, if I wanted to participate in that. And I said, yes. So once I finished my master's, he said, you know what? We already got the permanent residency. You can come back to Canada and you can stay here and whatnot. So I decided to stay here. And one thing led to another. And here I am doing a PhD here in Montreal.
Okay. Now, for the past 2 years, the entire world has been experiencing COVID-19. And this would have led to so many restrictions and limitations. For you as a young woman with a disability, how has it impacted you?
I have always been a more stay-at-home person. So I had no problem in coping with the fact that we have to stay at home. We have to work from home. We cannot travel. Although I had a problem with the fact that two people, meaning myself and my husband, we had to work from home in a small studio apartment, right? So we had a big issue of logistics, right? We had to adjust this place for two people to work from home. And a part of that, my brother had a baby boy in 2020. So I'm now an auntie. So it was very hard to be there for my brother and to only see my nephew through camera. So those were the challenges and the things that I had to cope with. Not precisely with the disability itself, because the disability itself, it's under management, but the rest, as I said, the logistics and not being able to see my nephew in person definitely represented a challenge.
Okay. So let's go back a little. Uh-huh. And, you know, what would you say would have been some of the major challenges that you face when you encounter people for the first time, when you meet with people? What would you say are some of the major challenges you face? Because Turner syndrome has certain characteristics which are physically obvious as well.
Yes. So as you said, it's physically obvious because we are of small stature. We have a tendency to be a bit overweight, but the most, at least for me, is the most hard condition that I have to deal with is the childish appearance that we have. We all look like little girls, right? So due to that, people have a tendency to underestimate me as a person and as a professional due to that childish appearance, right? People think I'm naive. People think I'm too sweet. They don't take me seriously at first. It's just only when they start interacting with me a little bit for a couple of while, then they realize, yes, I can be sweet. I'm not naive. And I can be other things as well.
Okay, so you refer to your profession. Tell us what profession you are in.
I am an elementary school teacher.
Mm-hmm. And you said you enjoy this?
I enjoy very much being a teacher, yes.
And this is with at-risk children or special needs children?
With able children.
Okay. Now, you referred to your, you know, the perception people have of you as a woman with a disability. How would you want people to engage you? How would you want people to respond to you and respect you?
I think just basically, as you said, respect, empathy, and equity, right? Because you never know the person that you have in front of you. And you will never really know who that person really is, right? You only know what they tell or they want to tell you. You don't know also how, when, where will you be in the future. So I think treating people with empathy and equity is a saving account for the future, because you might need these people and the future. Because yes, we're individuals, but we are also collective beings, right? We need each other. And I think if you treat people with empathy and equity, I think you can go places. It's the best way to treat people, I think, in my opinion.
Okay. Now, Luciana, you mentioned your husband. Share with us how you met and how your relationship has evolved.
Okay, so I met my husband here in Montreal. I came to Montreal alone, obviously. He came to Montreal alone, obviously. But we came to the same hotel, right? So we met at the hotel. And once we saw each other, we started going out for coffees. We started going out for dinners. And one thing led to another. We started living together, and then we're here.
As simple as that.
Yes.
Okay. And I know that for quite a lot of couples, having a child or children is important in their relationship.
Yes.
How would you say both of you have dealt with this topic and adjusted to you're not having any children?
Yeah, so you're correct, right? So one of the consequences, if you might want to say this way, is to the Turner syndrome, right? Is the fact that I am infertile, that I can't have kids. Well, I can have kids if I adopt, but I can't have kids biologically speaking. I always knew that. I always talked about that at home, and that helped me very much to cope with that situation. And that also helped me to understand that it's better to talk about things, right? So I just engaged in a conversation with my husband, and we had a very long, delicate conversation about this. And he was extremely kind, extremely receptive, helpful, loving, caring, and he had no problem with what I was talking to him and with the conversation.
Lovely. That is indeed beautiful, because so many times relationships can be broken because of one partner being unable to have a child. So this is indeed wonderful.
Yes.
And that level of support, both psychologically and physically, is indeed powerful.
Yes.
So I have to say, I admire your husband.
Thank you.
So, Luciana.
Yes.
What are some of the things you do for fun? What are some of your hobbies?
My hobbies. My husband and I, we share a hobby, which is go to the movies, right? The movie theaters. We like to see movies in the theaters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, due to the worldwide condition that we're living in, we haven't been able to do so for almost 2 years now, right?
Right.
But we have technology. So nowadays we have streaming companies that provide you with a series, with movies that you can just make up a profile, pay a monthly fee, and just enjoy it in your TV or in your computer or in your cell phone, right? So basically, one of the things that we do for fun is that. The mm-hmm. other thing that we enjoy together is to eat. We would often, on the weekends go to good restaurants and eat at restaurants and whatnot. But again, due to the situation, the worldwide situation that we live in for about 2 years now, we haven't been able to do so. So what we decided to do is buy better ingredients, fresh ingredients, so that we can cook at home. So now our new hobby is to browse the internet, especially YouTube videos, for good recipes and cook.
Wonderful. Nice, nice. That is great. And I'm sure you may be teaching him how to do some Brazilian dishes as well.
Oh, yes, yes. That cannot be amiss here. No.
All right. So, Luciana, are you involved in any disability organizations or any other charitable organizations?
No, no, okay. No, I'm not. Although, as I lived in Spain, mm-hmm. I volunteered back when I was in Spain for a couple of time for Turner Syndrome Association back there. And that led me to making friends there. So every August 28th, which is the day that we celebrate the International Day of Turner Syndrome, they call me, they invite me to do things through YouTube, like makeup tutorials, because I'm also an image consultant. Mm-hmm. So they call me to do a couple of fun activities to celebrate this day. So every August 28th, we do some fun things for the Turner Syndrome Associations back in Spain, because it's more than one, right? You have a couple of them distributed within Spain.
Okay, nice. Wonderful. And what would you say is one of the best pieces of advice you have received, and from whom?
Okay, one piece of advice that I received from my father was that human beings were born with 2 ears, but just one mouth. So you should listen more than you speak.
And how have you integrated that into your life?
Well, I try. I really try. I won't lie and say that I apply this 100% in my life, because again, that would be a lie. But I try to increase the percentage that I apply this within my life. I really try to listen more than I speak.
Now, just tell us quickly about your research, because you're doing your doctorate, your PhD in Canada. Tell us, what's your thesis, what's your focus, and why you chose that?
So my focus is on women with disabilities and their inclusion in the workforce. The reason why I chose this topic, well, because I'm a woman with disability, right? And I don't like to see the unemployment rates that we see women with disabilities. I want to help increase the employment rate of women with disabilities. And we're speaking specifically of full-time employment of women with disabilities. So my doctoral thesis is on that.
And is it targeting just a specific type of disability? Is it only for Canadians?
No. My thesis supervisor and I, we did not strictly specify, restrict a disability, because we are inclusive. We want to help the more that we can. And that's the reason why we also did not restrict the doctoral thesis to Canada. We did not restrict that. We are doing interviews worldwide.
Okay, nice. And my final question to you, Luciana, is what motivates you? What keeps you going and yearning for more and better for yourself and, you know, women or people with disabilities?
So I'm a very competitive person. And I have a tendency to compete with myself. So the thrive of always needing to overcome myself, it what motivates me to move forward. And you asked me about people with disabilities specifically, right? Mm-hmm. So what motivates me to help and keep on moving forward with people with disabilities is the fact that, yes, I am born with a disability, but I understand that my disability doesn't limit myself as much as probably other disabilities might limit people, right? So I want to reduce those limitations that other disabilities might face or ease it a little bit.
Wonderful. And that's an extremely positive and sound note to end on. So I really want to thank you very much, Luciana Alves, for so candidly sharing with us. And I look forward to talking with you again closer to your findings from your research project.
Thank you so very much, Eldely. Thank you for all the ones that are listening to us. I wish you all a very good day. Thank you so very much. And most definitely, we will keep in touch. Yeah. So have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Visions with me, Yodeli Wickham-Ashby, and my special guest, Luciana Alves. Remember, you can reach me on 1-246-269-9660 or 1-246-430-7300 and via email visionsbarbados@gmail.com. That is visionsbarbados@gmail.com. And of course, you can listen to this and past episodes by going to the VOB929.com website. Look for the link marked Visions Podcast, and there you go. So until next week, be brave, be bold, and be beautiful.